That. The subject today is Mosif V'Holich, what it means to add on, and why we add on our candles when it comes to Hanukkah. The idea, I guess, can be expressed through a story. Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, aside from being the Gadol Ador in Halacha, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was really the address for everyone who had a question in the late 1800s. Anything they needed, that was the person they went to. He was a Baal Halacha, but not just a person of Halacha, but a person who was really involved in everything that Klal Yisrael had. He lived in Russia. And at the time, living in Russia for younger men was a death sentence. Because there was no choice. You were inscripted into the army at a very young age, and many of them were there for 25 years before they could get out. There were no kashrus options for them. There was nothing that they could do while they were in the army itself, and it was almost an impossible situation for them, almost impossible for them to get out of. So Rav Yitzchak Elchanan spent much of his time, even though he was a Rosh Shiva and answering all the shailas and being the Rav that he was, he spent a lot of time trying to get Peturim, trying to get exemptions from the draft for those people that he could, the young men that were going to be around, trying to exempt them from the army itself. So one day, while he was sitting together with another Rav, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan was sitting down, there came a knock on his door. A bachur walked in, and he said, Rebbe, Shlomo got an exempt from the army. So Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan looked at him and said, thank you so much for telling me. That's unbelievable. Thank you so much. Then another. 5 minutes later, another young man walked in, knocked on his door and said, Rebbe, you'll never believe it. Shlomo, you got a p'tur. Rabbi Zalchan looked at him, smiled so big. He said, thank you so much for telling. That's unbelievable. Thank you so much. Another 5-10 minutes later, another bachur walked in, knocked on his door. Rebbe, I know you wanted to hear this. I knew you'd want to hear it as soon as you could. But Shlomo just got a p'tur from the army. And he said, thank you so much. The exact same expression, the exact same simcha that you could have. Seems like he had it every single time. It happened 6 or 7 times in which somebody walked into the room to tell Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan what was happening. And each time his response was exactly the same, if not more so. And he looked and said, thank you so much for telling me. So eventually the Rav who was sitting next to Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, he said to him, how are you doing this? You've heard. At some point, you know, you're going to say, I heard already. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I don't need to know anymore. And at that time, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan looked at him and he said, each bachur wants the pleasure of telling me the great news. They want to be the person to tell me. And I should deprive them of that pleasure? I should take that away from them? Every single person that comes in has to get my smile, has to get my thanks, has to feel like I'm there for him. Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan explained it that way. I should tell you that I once told over this story. And right when I was saying it, I was telling it over and I was saying how important it is to sometimes hear it, somebody stopped me right there and said, Rebbe, I already heard this story. I said, I definitely hear you. I get you. Let's finish this story and see if we can get a different lesson out of this story. There might be another lesson to learn out of the story itself. See, it seems to us, if a person, let's just say a person makes a really big business deal and makes a lot of money off it, there's going to be a tremendous amount of simcha. If somebody's sitting there, I can tell you a story where a friend of mine was a waiter in a kosher restaurant in L.A. So at this restaurant in L.A., it was a very expensive restaurant. He was a waiter, and he said, the typical type of tip is what you normally see, 18% to 22%. That's the normal tip that they see. And he knows, and it's an expensive restaurant, he knows how much he's making per day. One day, as he was sitting in the restaurant, 3 huge Cadillac Escalades came right in front of the set. They double parked right in front, and out came an entire entourage of people, a huge entourage of people. Now, who was it? It was a boxer. Some of you might know him, some of you might not know him. His name was Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather was an amazing boxer. He's retired now, officially, but he's an amazing boxer, and he was well known as having always, wherever he went, he had about 30 people with him. So he went into the restaurant and he told them, he said, I want a private room. So the restaurant got that once in a while where somebody came in, a famous person, they had a room in the back and they set it up. They said, you have to give us 5 minutes, we'll set it up in 5 minutes. They had everybody working, they got all the tables together, worked it out in the back, they had everyone sitting. And he walked in and they ordered everything. They just kept ordering and ordering and ordering, they had everything there. Floyd Mayweather was paying for everything. He knew, everybody knew, he's taking the bill and he's taking care of everything. And they ordered, it's just a tremendous. When the bill came out, so my friend, his name is David, he went up to Floyd Mayweather and he said to him, here's the bill. The bill came out to a couple thousand dollars. So there's a famous thing about Mr. Mayweather. So what he does is, he has a black bag that he keeps right by him at all times. He doesn't believe in banks, and he carries with him rolls of $100 bills, rolls of them. Now, if you think to yourself, well, that's really dangerous, right? That's really dangerous to carry all of that money on you at all times. Just remember, this is the greatest boxer in the world. This is a person who could beat up anyone in the world, extremely strong. And not only that, he had people with him. Every single one of them was carrying guns, every single one. You're not going to try to rob Floyd Mayweather unless you have an army. And even then, I would put my money on Mr. Mayweather. I think that's what I would do. But he had an entire black bag. So my friend told me, David told me, that he saw Floyd reach into the famous bag and pull out a roll, like a bunch of bills that fit into his entire hand, a whole thing wrapped up in these huge rubber bands. And he takes it off and he starts counting out the hundreds. He counts out $10,000. Now, the bill came out to a couple thousand. $10,000. Put it on the table, and he said to my friend David, he said, are we cool? David said, oh, we are beyond cool. This is the coolest thing I have ever seen in my life. 100% we are cool. And he took it and he said, yeah, that's exactly that. You can have deals like that. You can have days like that where he said he made, altogether, he made 20 times the normal amount that he makes in a week in that one night. 20 times in that one night. And he said it was an exciting night. When a person has that happen to them, there's that deal, something happens, and all of a sudden, well, of course, there's going to be this simcha. There's going to be this happiness that exudes from you. How could you not be ecstatic? Look at what just happened, where everybody's standing there and saying, wow, this is an amazing thing that happened. And you know what? If it happens again, and the person then does it again, another business deal, another great situation. Something happens, and then a third time, and a fourth time, and a fifth time. Each time there's a brand new simcha, it feels like it's the first time. You could have millions, you could have tens of millions, and it doesn't make a difference. Every single time you make more, there's an excitement, there's something that happens. But what about if someone else made that? When you hear that someone else made, let's say it was a friend of yours. So you hear about that, you say, wow, that's amazing, absolutely amazing, I can't believe you did that, that's great. The second time, maybe you'll still say, that's amazing, that's unbelievable, I can't believe you did that. The third, fourth, fifth, sixth time, when it's somebody else, when it's not you, then it's already like, I expect that already. Then it's already becomes an expectation. So this is really from Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler asked the question, Michtam Eliyahu, what's the difference? Why is it that when it comes to myself, I'm besimcha, I'm always happy, and every single time something happens, I'm happier and happier and happier. Maybe not more, but I'm as happy as I was before. But when it comes to someone else having it, eventually that stops. It doesn't grow. It remains sort of where it is, and that's about it. What's the difference between them? So Rav Dessler answers with the following. He says, we're not used to our own hatzlacha. Even when we're successful, we don't feel it the same way. Because we feel like we know what we've gone through. We know the pain that we went through in order to make sure this business deal went through. We know how much we had to work in order to get this done. My friend David said he'd never worked so hard in that 2 hours in his life. He was running back and forth to make sure they had everything they needed. So granted, the fact that you got paid at the end of the day, it's almost like an expectation. Well, of course, I deserve this from all the work that I did. I know what I did to get this done. But when we see other people, our reaction is typically, it's a normal human reaction, wow, they just got it for free. They didn't put forth the effort. They didn't do what they needed to do. Maybe the first time you know how much effort he put in. The second time you might know. But as it happens again and again and again, then it's sort of like, wow, man, these wealthy people, they just get wealthier. These things that happen, it just gets more and more and more. It's the thought process that goes in. Says Rav Dessler, you just don't see others' hatzlacha as the same as your own. Their success as the same thing that is by you. It's almost, and he calls it this way, poches v'holich. As it goes on, it gets less and less and less. Because my expectations for that guy and what happens by that person almost become, yeah, that's what I expect out of him. If I hear something different, maybe it changes. It's the same thing on a chag. Everyone knows, going into a chag, and I realize, because I cook also, not as much, 100%, but I cook also, and I go into it, and I understand, going into a chag is exciting. That first day of Yom Tov, whether it's Pesach or Sukkot, even in Chicago when it's 30 degrees and you're sitting outside in a sukkah, there's an excitement toward Yom Tov, to have the family and to be around people. There's an excitement that goes in to what a Yom Tov is all about. But as time goes on, the first day of Yom Tov, then the second day of Yom Tov, then the third day of Yom Tov, and the fourth day of Yom Tov, then you're just counting calories. Now it's all about, how many meals did I have? Was it 22 or 23 meals that I just ate? How many of them were fleishik? How many of them were milchik? How many of them contained that amount of bread? How much cholesterol and how much protein? How much did I get over those past couple weeks? That's the thought. The thought process that goes in is we start losing it as the Yom Tov goes on. It's no longer strong. It's no longer, we'll call it mosif v'holich. You're not adding on to it. It's poches v'holich. I'm looking at it and I'm saying, well, I just lost. I just lost out on more. Why? Chagim should not be that way. A holiday should all be about you growing, about you building it up, about making it more, about building it up to something even greater. I'm adding on to it. I'm mosif to it. I'm adding on as much as I possibly can. Says the way that Reb Dessler, the way that he understands it, the true gedolim, if you watch them on Sukkot, if you watch them on Pesach, you're going to see them grow with the holiday. Where the holiday becomes all about them, where they love everything that happens to them. That's what you should see. And the truth is, that's what Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and Simchas Torah really is all about. It's where Rosh Hashanah, your intrepidation, there's a fear there. Yom Kippur, you're already saying to yourself, you know what? But I have a chance. I have a chance. I feel like I can do this. Sukkot, you feel enveloped almost in the hug of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the sukkah, again, in anywhere but Chicago and up north, but you feel almost like you're enveloped, you thank a Kadosh Baruch Hu for this, and then Simchas Torah, the simcha exudes from you. How could you not want to dance? How could you not want to jump around and do whatever you need to do? It should be that way. But we just don't see it. We simply put, we don't see it. Because naturally speaking, we look at things and we say, well, now I'm used to it. I'm used to what Sukkot is. I'm used to Pesach. And now it becomes a little bit more annoying. I can't have that bread. I don't know if I'm filling up on matzah. I have to sit outside every time? Really? I'm missing out on something. Every day Shacharis is that much longer because of the extra. Again, at first it's exciting. And then it's sort of, I heard this song for Hallel before. I've done this already. Now what? Now what do we do? And I am not disparaging grandchildren, but I remember my parents, my grandparents, when I used to come over, right? After a while, it's, you know what? I could do without the 37 grandchildren in the house. I could do without that. It might be, like, I understand. It's awesome to see everybody at first, and when you see the pictures of everybody lined up with all their Yom Tov finery, and they're all wearing the same thing one after the other, well, that's amazing, right? On day six, when all of that Yom Tov finery is now in the garbage because it's been ruined by grape juice or anything else that's happened, right, then it's already, well, maybe you want to go to a hotel for the last days of Yom Tov. Maybe that goes through. And that's just what happens. So what is it? What's the difference? So here's what Rev Dessler says, and the idea behind it, the idea that I think we're going to expand on. The idea is there's two types of avodas that everybody has. There's an avoda called the service of chitzonis. Our avoda chitzonis, our outward appearance and what we do outwardly in everything we do in this world. And then there's avoda pnimis, the inner avoda, our inner avoda that we have within the neshama itself. Mitzvah Leo says, there's no question whatsoever. When it comes to the avoda chitzonis, the outer avoda that we have, that's a real shalo lishma type of avoda. It's something in which we're not really doing it for the reason that we should be. We're doing it because that's what we're supposed to do. Sometimes it's for outer appearances. I can't tell you, listen, as a rabbi, both a rebbe in Skokie Yeshiva and as a rabbi of a shul, if I decide one morning I'm not going to go to Shacharis, I don't really get to make that decision. I can't really decide that. So in a way, it's scary because I'm going to Shacharis and I'm davening the way that I daven. My Shmona Esrei is geared toward to being a certain Shmona Esrei, not necessarily for me. I can't get up one morning and decide, you know what, I'm just going to have a one-minute Shacharis and I'm just going to be done and go home. I can't decide that. It's really, this is what those students have to see of me. If I'm standing in front, maybe if I was sitting in the back, but if I'm standing in front and everybody's looking at me and I go up there and I just do my little, you know, three steps back, and maybe you've seen this by kids, hopefully you haven't, of the three steps back and then you're done, right? looks strange, but that's exactly what I even if I wanted to do that, I can't do it. So I'm forced to be the person that I am because of my surroundings. That's called an avodah chitzonis, where it's shelo lishma. It's mitzvahs anashim melumada, where people do things just because that's what you're supposed to do. I bench because I'm supposed to bench. I make brachos because I'm supposed to make brachos. I go to davening because I'm supposed to go to davening. That's what I do. That's not the way for any of us to act. It should be that we're improving upon ourselves. But the avoda chitzonis is really, really hard. It's an outward appearance in which I have expectations thrust upon me. And if I don't do them, then who am I as a person? It's almost like you're doing it. Says Rav Dessler, that's not what a person should necessarily be working on. It's the avoda panimis. Now, what's the avoda panimis? Well, it's dealing with me on the inside and what I am as a person that should keep growing. That means that even if I have to daven in front, that doesn't mean my davening has to be the same way that I normally do. Maybe I change something up a little bit. I fly through a certain part that I'm not in that mood for that moment, and I spend an extra 3 minutes, let's say, just on Rifa'inu, because I happen to know somebody that's not feeling well today. Of course, there are people that are sick every day, but I can't tell you that I'm feeling that every single day. So every day, what I could do in my avoda panimis, without anybody knowing, is concentrate on one thing that nobody else will know. Making an asher yotzer after coming out of a washroom. That's a bracha that really no one is going to know whether you're making or not. You have no idea. No idea. Because nobody's watching you. Nobody's doing anything for it. So what's your asher yotzer like? Is your asher yotzer a 12-second yotze zayin asher yotzer? I'm being yotze. I'm saying my asher yotzer. Or you're going to stay there. You're going to stay there and sit there and say to yourself, you know what? Today, this is going to be a different asher yotzer. Today, it's going to be a 30-second asher yotzer. Today, I'm going to remember what every word means. And I'm going to say everything. Chalulim, chalulim. They're going to be hollow and hollow. Nikavim, nikavim. I'm going to say there are different holes within a person's body. And she'im yipaseh hachamim. And I'm actually going to think about what I'm going to do. And that's that. That, says Rav Dessler, is an avoda panimis, where I'm thinking about myself. And I'm growing every single day. Because even if I'm not able to do it every day, because I can't, there's no way I'm going to make my asher yotzer the same way every day, 30 seconds long or a minute long. There's stuff to do, and my life isn't like that. Nobody's like that. My avoda panimis is I'm taking on something for today, for this week, for this month, for whatever it is, and I'm saying, here's going to be my deal. I was once at a meal where it was men and women, all Talmidei Chachamim, was in Eretz Yisrael, by my Bubby and Zaidi, and all the people there were either rabbis or were rabbis. I was a kid, I think I was 18 years old, but everybody there was a rabbi or were rabbis. The wives were all Rebbetzins or teachers, like big teachers out there. I remember one of them was a student of Nechama Leibowitz. That was one of the people that was there. And they decided they were going to say a Dvar Torah, and everybody at the table had to add on to the Dvar Torah. Everybody had to say something. You started off with one, and then everybody had to add on to that. You couldn't go off subject. It had to be there. There was about 16 people there, and every single person, it was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. Every person didn't one up the other. You get that sometimes, where one person's saying, well, I got a better idea. I've got a better Dvar Torah. This was each one adding on. What you just said is amazing, and I think that we could also say the following. And each one did it. I don't think I was at a better meal. Since that meal that I had in Eretz Yisrael, and I've tried to replicate it, it just doesn't work the same, mostly because I have more boys than girls in my house. But it's difficult to replicate that idea, to be able to go through. It's hard. It's hard to know what it means to add to someone and feel like you're adding, being mosif, as opposed to trying to knock out, totally destroy, and build up another thing over here. And the truth is, this is really what the Gemara is all about. There's an unbelievable Gemara that talks about Doeg Hoadomi and Achitofel. As we all know, Doeg Hoadomi was the chief advisor to Shaul HaMelech. When Shaul HaMelech was chasing after David, Doeg Hoadomi, surprisingly, Doeg's name is the same gematria as David, Aleph and Gimel are just like a Dalet. But Doeg Hoadomi was the one who was telling Shaul HaMelech that David's out to kill you. David really doesn't mean this way. David is a terrible person. And Doeg Hoadomi destroyed, after speaking Lashon Hara, destroyed Nov Ira Kohanim. He himself murdered the 86 Kohanim that were Nosi Abad, those Kohanim that were in Nov. He's the one who later on may have killed Shaul. The Medrash says that there was an Amaleki in Shmuel Beis and Perek Aleph, an Amaleki, a Ger Amaleki, who claimed that he was there when Shaul HaMelech died and put Shaul out of his misery. Shaul HaMelech, in Shmuel Aleph, it says he fell on his sword. A Ger Amaleki claimed it was him. So that Ger Amaleki, according to the Medrash, was Doeg HaAdomi. Doeg HaAdomi was, it seems, from the Navi, a terrible person. Achitofel, the chief advisor to David HaMelech. Look what he did. Achitofel started the rebellion of Avshalom. Achitofel being the chief advisor to Avshalom and trying to take everybody down, what David HaMelech was. The Gemara goes through, what was wrong with them? They were tremendous Talmid Chachamim. There's no question they learned. So what's wrong with them? So the Gemara describes, what it was. It says, you know what they did? They had Migdal HaPoreach Ba'avir. They had these towers that were flying in the air. And in these Migdalim HaPoreachim Ba'avir, in these towers flying in the air, they were able to ask Shilas 300 questions and answers they were able to have in this tower that floated up in the heavens. And they said, the Gemara says, so what's the big deal? They were such Talmid Chachamim, how could they have done this? It's really not answered there. But by the Meforshim, it says the following. When a person is learning something, you have to have a basis. Whenever you build a big house, or let's say like a large apartment structure, the first thing you need is the bottom. You need to make sure that you can hold everything that you're going to be building on top of. You need a foundation. After you build that foundation, as strong as it is, then you can build the bottom floor. But the bottom floor has to be heavier than the floors above it. If the top floors are heavier, obviously the entire structure is going to come falling down. So you need to build from the bottom up. You always need to build from the bottom up. That's the way any building works. The way we understand this is these towers were not from the bottom up. They were from the top down. See, normally we start with the Chumash. And we have the great foundation of the Chumash itself and we can build up a Dvar Torah. From the Chumash, we can understand what the Chumash is saying from Torah Shebaal Peh. Sometimes that takes Gemaras, sometimes that takes Midrashim. There's an ability to understand it, and it goes a little bit further up. On top of that, you can build up with the words of the great Amorayim or the Savorayim, whether that's the Gemara or getting into the Gaonic period. From there, you can get the Rishonim, whether there's a Rashi on the subject, a Rambam, a Ramban, a Ritva, one of the great Rishonim. And then you can build on top of that with the Achronim. Well, there's so many of them. You can go with a Shach or a Taz. You can use a Magen Avram. You have the ability to go to a Pnei Yoshua. You can even go to a Chazon Ish more recently, a Reb Moshe Feinstein, something like Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, and build up on top of that. And then, on top of all that, there's the idea that Tzvi Zimmerman wants to put on top, almost like a cherry on top. But the Migdal Poreach Ba'avir people, Doeg HaAdomi and Achitofel, did not think they needed a basis. They just threw these Divrei Torah up there and made ideas that were poreach ba'avir, floating up in the air. If there's no basis behind what you're saying, if there's nothing you can point back to and say, this is from the Torah itself, or this is from that Gemara, it's based on this idea, even if you're arguing with the essential idea that the Gemara is saying. But if you're not basing it on something, you're just floating up in the air. You're doing, really, something very, very strange, as if you're missing out on the entire point of what Torah learning is all about. There's no building up. It's not like you're helping the other person out. You're knocking down and you're building your own. For that, Doeg and Achitofel, they learned. They learned a ton. They were unbelievable Talmid Chachamim. But it ended there. There's no structure. There's no basis. That can't go on. And Doeg and Achitofel's learning never helped them in anything they did. So now, our subject for today. Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. We have a Gemara in Shabbos. 21b, that says Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue on how to light the candles of the menorah. And being Rosh Chodesh Kislev, or Erev Rosh Chodesh Kislev, Yom Kippur Katan of Rosh Chodesh Kislev, the idea behind Hanukkah is very much in our minds. It's coming so soon. If you haven't bought your presents yet, I guess you're waiting until Black Friday. I guess that's what you're doing. But it's coming up so soon. What do you do on Hanukkah? Beis Shammai says, by the Pareachag, the cows, the bulls that were brought on Sukkot, for the nations of the world. On the first day of Sukkot, you bring 13 parim. On the second day of Sukkot, you brought 12 parim. On the third day of Sukkot, you brought 11. And you keep going, goes down, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. Each day of Sukkot, the pareachag go down. So he says, just like Sukkot, so too for Hanukkah, the lights should go down. Day one, you light 8 candles. Day two, you light 7 candles. Day three, you light 6 candles, and you go down from there. Beis Hillel says, no, You always should be mylin bekodesh ve'emorid. You always go up when it comes to kodesh. You try to raise yourself up in kedusha. Kedusha should always be about going up. And therefore, if you're mylin bekodesh, you should go one, then two, then three, then four. I don't need to tell anyone here. Obviously, we hold like Beis Hillel over Beis Shammai. There are times where we hold like Beis Shammai. There are very few times, but six times, maybe seven times, where we go with Beis Shammai. But clearly, we go with Beis Hillel. There's no question. But what is this machlokis all about? What are they arguing about? What's Beis Shammai's idea that he's learning that it has to go down and Beis Hillel is learning to go up? What's the difference between them? And Rav Dessler, and here's where Rav Dessler ends. Rav Dessler says that the idea behind him is just this. Beis Shammai is about the klal, what everyone can handle. Avoda chitzonis is much easier for us to do. You tell a person that they should go do mitzvos because they'll be rewarded for it. Go learn, because I'm going to give you a prize, like father-son learning. And I'll give you, you can enter into a raffle and you're going to get a prize. Or I'll tell my kids, if you do a certain amount of learning every night, then you're going to get a dessert for after dinner every single night. You could do that. And there's no question that is the easiest way of doing it, and one of the greatest lessons in chinuch that a person should know, that there always will be a reward for it. There always will be something for it. That's called avodah chitzonis, and that's amazing. In that way, it's almost as if we're looking at the world from an avodah chitzonis type of way. Start off with eight, give him everything you possibly can, reward the kid, but as he gets older, you slowly but surely wean him off of those prizes so he starts doing it in a better fashion. You start him off all the way with every bit of money that he can possibly get, eight, and then he goes 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's a method of chinuch, and it's the method of chinuch that we use in our schools. We reward children, but obviously we're not rewarding them when they're in eighth grade. We're no longer giving them snack and all those extra freeze pops and prizes when they're in eighth grade. You're not expecting that. When they're in high school, it's even less. It's one of the hardest things that you can have as an NCSY graduate. The NCSY, people that are in NCSY for those 4 years when they're in high school, they're cheered on by their madrichim. The madrich and the madricha will look at them and say, you did amazing, you're absolutely amazing, that's awesome. And they're giving that the reward, that self-respect that they deserve, that they should have. And then all of a sudden, they're back from Eretz Yisrael, they're in college, and it's just, where are the cheerings? Where's everybody cheering for me? Why is nobody coming around and saying, you did a great job, you daven shach? Well, then it's expected. This is our method of chinuch, and for good or for bad, we expect that mitoch shelo lishma, ba lishma. So Beis Shammai looks at Hanukkah and says it's exactly that. You start off high and you end low. Because this is our method. We're going to do it shelo lishma. That's what people can do. That's how we expect people to be. Beis Hillel looks at it and says, Hanukkah is a different type of chag. Although that's the normal method of Hanukkah, and that's what we normally do by these people. But Hanukkah is a completely different type of idea. The holiday is a different holiday. The holiday is about people that were trying to become better. It's a holiday in which people were not doing mitzvah nashim lumada. Mitzvah nashim lumada is, don't worry, you can be a Syrian Greek, and you also can learn Torah. You can do what they do, and it doesn't interfere with your relationship with God. You want to believe in God? You 100% can. Just first, do what we're doing, and then come back. I hate to compare, because it truly is. I am a sports fan. There's no question whatsoever. But the fact, what the Syrian Greeks tried to do in bringing their sports, their Olympics to, they didn't have the Olympics yet, but the idea of what they represented to Klal Yisrael and make Klal Yisrael be involved in that. That's exactly what we see nowadays, where we look at it and we say, well, there's not really a stira. It's a difficult thing to really go through. But that was the klal. This is Beis Shammai's 8-1. Beis Hillel looks at it and says, no. It's building yourself up from the bottom up. It's saying to yourself, you know what? I'm not starting off on 8. I'm going to start doing things the right way. And I'm always going to do them the right way. I'm going to be that way my whole life. I'm going to work it out little by little by little. I don't need prizes because I know my prize will really be at the end of the day. I know that I'll build myself up to become the eight candles. So at first I start off low and then I end off high. I go the other way around. I'm doing the exact opposite. And that really is a question that we all have to ask ourselves. When we're trying to get ourselves into something, do we start as chassidim? Do we start as, let's be the best that we can possibly be, and we look for the absolute greatest, and then we try to go as far as we can? Or do we start off really low and we build ourselves up slowly? Beis Shammai is the building up slowly type. And Beis Hillel is, jump to it. Become that great person. And normally, we paskin like Beis Shammai. This is who our world is. On Sukkot, we go pari achag, we go down, because that's the normal thing for people to do. We can't always be these people that are lishma. Says Beis Hillel, Chanukah is different. Build yourself up from the top down. I want you to go from the bottom up. I'm sorry, from the bottom up. You want to build yourself up from the bottom up and make yourselves into those unbelievable people. Be it from the level of a chassid, the level of what a chassid can do. Now there's milas to each one. Let's think. If I start off really low, and I try to, I'm making myself do it shalol lishma, and eventually I'm going to be there. There are some people who need that because they can't start off on such a high level, but there are other people who look at it and they're just like, I'm not really doing much. I don't grow as much. I'm not sure I'm really getting somewhere. You start the other way, and you start all the way up high, then there's a huge chance that you're going to crash. An unbelievable chance you're going to crash. And then what do you do after that? What happens after that point? Chanukah is a reminder that not everything in our lives has to be the slow but sure, take it little by little, and do it that way. Sometimes it's all about grabbing something awesome, taking it in for yourself, really grabbing it and saying, this is what I am. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a gadol. I'm going to reach for the stars. I'm going to be the absolute best that I can be. And whether you make it or not doesn't really matter. You're trying for greatness. It's one of the big questions that we have with our shiurim and Skokie Yeshiva. Do we start off slowly and then build yourself up? And I know that's a derech, and I know people do that. Or do we strive for greatness from day one? And have that expectation even from day one, and have a certain expectation, and you should be living up to that from that first day. Each time, it's a little bit of a question, how to treat kids, how do you treat a ninth grader, or how do you treat a 12th grader versus how to treat a base medrash guy. And there's so many different methods, so many different ways of going about it. This is really the machlokas, Yosef and Yehuda. If you look at Yosef and Yehuda's lives, look at Yosef for a second. Is there anybody who's been in more of a rut or on top of the world like him? Yosef is the king of the brothers, and he's literally thrown into a pit. He becomes the head of everybody in Potiphar's house. And then he's again thrown in jail and is in the bottom of the world. And then he becomes the king of Mitzrayim. There's no middle ground by Yosef. He's either awesome or he's nothing. That's Yosef's world and how he lives. Yehuda is little by little. Yehuda's about tshuva. He does something wrong, he feels bad, he works on it, and he becomes better. Yehuda's world is building himself up to some other thing, something great, something awesome. It's little by little becoming something a little bit more. Each method has its way. Each method has its idea. But you got to hear a medrash. There's a medrash that says that the angels, when they saw Yehuda and Yosef fighting over Binyamin, and we all know this, Vayigash love Yehuda. Yehuda approached Yosef and said, you can't let this happen. I'm not allowing Binyamin to stay here. The Malachim called out in Shemayim and they said, let's go watch an ox defeat a lion. Let's go watch an ox defeat a lion. They were looking at Yosef as the ox. Now, an ox is all or nothing. You look at a cow out there. These cows, they look like they're the laziest creatures in the world. They don't look like they have anything whatsoever. They're just eating, and they're chewing their cud, and they're staring at you. They're doing absolutely nothing. But in one second, the ox can come and gore and destroy a person. A lion, its claws, its teeth, everything is right there. Its essence is malchus, is kingship. It has the ability to destroy at every second. And it's interesting to watch a lion. The lion, when it gets up, and I always say, Yisgaber Kari in the morning. What it means is, it gets itself ready, it's stretching its limbs without even noticing it, and then it jumps up inside. It's not a 0 to 60. A lion is 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 40, 50, 40 to 50. And you might not see it, but the lion gets itself up. It's why we wake up in the morning, we say, Moda Ani Lefanecha, and we slowly but surely say our Moda Ani Lefanecha and get somewhere. Yosef HaTzadik stands for up and down, and you're either the best or, and Yehuda represents that idea of building yourself up slowly. It's almost as if to say, Yehuda is that Beis Shammai world And Yosef is that world of start off on top. You can do it. Be there. On Hanukkah especially. Try to be at that level. Try to build yourself up that way. I'm going to end with a story. And I feel that this is a story that should be known by more people. I don't know why people don't know it. But it's the Maggid of Kelm. The Maggid of Kelm used to say over the following. He used to say that he used to go to different cities. And he went to a certain city. And he came to this one city. I forgot what it was called. But he came to the city and he asked, is there anything here that needs to be fixed? I said, Rebbe, this town is really good. We have a tremendous rav, and we have great mashpiyim, people that are helping other people. There are great things going on in this town. He said, there's nothing? He said, there is something. There's a moser that lives in this town. A moser is a person that used to tell on the government what people were doing wrong, try to get them in trouble. He said, there is a moser in this town. So the Maggid of Kelm said, okay, I'm going to say something. Is there any good redeeming quality about this guy? He said, there is a redeeming quality. He always tells the truth. If he says he's going to get you in trouble, he gets you in trouble. That's always going to happen. He always tells the truth. So the Maggid comes and said, great. Found the Moser. Went up to him and said, Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Yed. He said, what do you want from me? So Maggid said, I just said Shalom Aleichem. I just wanted to say hello to you. So he said, you want something from me. What do you want from me? He said, listen, Rabbi Yed, all I want is for you to come to a speech of mine. I'm a person who goes from town to town, saying over different things. I'm a Maggid. I'm going to tell over good stories. I'd like you to come to a class that I'm going to be giving. So the guy looked at him and said, I'm not coming to any of your classes. He said, please, Rabbi Yed, I really want you to come. You don't even have to stay the whole time. I just need you to come. So that guy saw he wasn't going to get rid of the Maggid so quickly. So he said, you know what? I'll come. He said, I heard you say you'll come. You always tell the truth. You always tell the truth, right? I want to make sure you're going to come. He said, I'll come. So on the day where he gave the speech, he was ready to start a speech, but the guy wasn't there. The Maggid looked around, he saw that he wasn't there. So he sent a delegation over to his house. Tell him, he told the Maggid he was going to come, tell him to come. So the delegation went, they got the guy over, they pulled the guy in. This guy is standing, comes inside the room. The Maggid of Kelm starts off his speech. And he looks at this guy, sees this guy back there and says, you think that you're able to sit down in a speech like this? And you're going to be okay? Turns to the Maggid of Kelm, turns to the guy, and he says, do you know how many children are orphaned because of you? Do you know how many wives are agunas because their husbands were taken away and we don't know what happened to them because of you? Do you know how many lives were destroyed because of what you've done? What kind of a person are you? What kind of a person lives in this world and is able to be a person? How could it be? The guy was so shocked, he fainted. They revived him. They quickly revived him. He said, Rebbe, you're right. I feel horrible about what I'm going to do, about what I've done. I'm going to turn over a new leaf. So from that day forward, the guy became a well-known Talmud Chacham. Sat in the Beis Medrash all day long, and all he did was learn. 5 years later, the Maggid of Kelm comes by again. And he hears how this guy is doing. They said, Rebbe, you would never believe it. People who are younger in this community, they don't even know this guy. They just know him as the big tzaddik who sits in shuls all day. All the women of the town bring him meals for him to learn because he's such a special person. So Maggid of Kelm says, I'm going to give another speech. Make sure everybody's there. Make sure that this guy is there as well. The old moser, make sure he's there. Gets up and he speaks. And he comes inside. And he's sitting in front and he has a little sefer with him because now he's learning all the time. Right? And the Maggid of Kelm looks and he says, do you think you were forgiven for all the people that you destroyed because you're sitting and learning now? Did you give anything back to the community? Did you help the people that you destroyed before? And what have you done until now? Maggid of Kelm told him that and the guy fainted again. They revived him and he fainted a third time. So they revived him again. They brought him up and he looked over the Maggid of Kelm. He said, what do you want from me? Maggid of Kelm says, looks at him and he says, I want you to understand what the concept of tshuva is. Tshuva is not about just changing yourself completely and making yourself into a different person. It's about changing your attitude and who you are as a person. It's about moving your head around. It's not about the chitzonius and you were a moser and you were evil and now you're a great tzaddik because it's all about changing your attitude. Your attitude is the same as it was when you were a moser. You just said, instead of doing this, I'm going to do that. I need you to change the attitude of everything being about yourself. Of everything being about you. I need you to start working for a community. I need you to be somebody who's involved in the community endeavors, everything they do, not just sitting inside a Beis Medrash, which is unbelievable for some people, but for you, you are a different type of person. You are a different person when it comes to this. Magid HaKelm told that over to him, and he said, you're right, Rebbe, I'm going to change over a new leaf. I'm going to change myself from who I was. The way we're understanding this, the way Rav Dussler is saying this, is that Hanukkah is all about changing yourself as a person. Changing. Going from one thing to the other, almost in an extreme way. Starting at one and building yourself up to eight, but being an extreme, something that's extreme, where I'm not doing it for more than what I'm given. But there's more to it. The rest of the year still has to follow suit. If a person takes a huge leap, and then says, for the rest of the year, I'll do whatever. It's never going to work. Take on something. It's a little bit of something here and a little bit of something there. Hanukkah, you become Mahadran and Mahadran. During the rest of the year, we understand there's a regular life to live. We do something different. We're going to try to act in a different way. So I think the main message, the main idea that I want to get out is just this. There's an Avoda Chitzonis. Avoda Chitzonis, the way we change things, seems to be in an extreme fashion. Avoda Panimius, the inner Avoda that we have, that has to be changed little by little. So Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are both right. When it comes to Hanukkah, we change ourselves in an extreme fashion. We show all the candles. We do everything as if we are the Mahadran Min Mahadran. We do things in that way. When it comes to Chitzonius, we have to go extreme. When it comes to Panimius, who we are as people and what we do privately, that's when we change little by little. We take one thing and another thing and add to it little by little to become the best people that we could possibly be. Thank you so much for having me. Have a great Rosh Chodesh.